You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason and Fred Mills. Today, we're talking about the state of radio and referring to a new paper put together by the Council for Research Excellence, along with the Nielsen Company. It's called How U.S. Adults Use Radio and Other Forms of Audio, and studying five markets in the country: Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Philadelphia, and Seattle. The paper paints a much rosier picture for the state of radio than I would have imagined, and debunks a lot of myths, such as the myth that people don't listen to the radio anymore. Well, it says that broadcast radio has a 79% reach and gets an average of 120 minutes per day from listeners. It also goes on to tackle other myths that young people don't listen to the radio anymore, that nobody listens to CDs anymore, that the internet is where people discover music, that the digital crowd has given up on any other format, that young people don't buy CDs, and that the iPod has killed off the radio and CDs, and debunks the myth that the computer is the new stereo with all of this data. That's what we're talking about today on What It Is, and what is your take on the state of radio, Jeff?
Well, I think maybe one of the reasons that the study sounds a little bit rosier than you or I might think it would be is because the survey has taken place in those five urban places. I would think if you're in any urban setting in the United States, chances are you're going to be able to find a radio station that you like, or several radio stations that you like. If you're a little bit in the hinterlands, though, I think you might turn to those other options a little bit more just because radio may be a little bit duller.
Well, I can think back to when I was a teenager growing up in a small town southeast of Charlotte. Pretty much the only stations I could get were out of maybe Columbia, but more likely just Charlotte. And so there was like, and I'm going to date myself here, there was one big FM station in Charlotte and one big AM station in Charlotte and a couple of smaller ones. So in that regard, I can see why I would turn to 8-track tapes, listen to in my car, and then cassette tapes, because I wasn't really satisfied with what I was getting from radio. So you kind of fast forward that to the modern era and whatever the music delivery device is, MP3s, iPods, or what have you. I can see an argument, a prima facie argument being made for people getting their music from different sources than radio. But as you say, if they have access to a lot of diversity of stations, I think that study pretty much proves, at least in those particular areas, that they are kind of following just along traditional lines. Turn on the radio in the car. When they're at home, they might do private listening via their iPod and their earbuds and everything. But I think it's going to be a long time before you kill that old beast called FM radio.
I don't think you ever will, because, I'm biased. I'm the editor of a local newspaper, and I think one of the reasons that local newspapers are going to have a good survival rate compared to maybe big city newspapers is because they are local, and people turn to these local newspapers and local radios for the weather reports, for the local news, for a spotlight, maybe an interview with a local celebrity. You know, I know that during local elections, people turn to their radio all the time, you know, to find out the results first. You're not going to find that online, I don't believe.
Well, this is where WNCW will reap some benefits of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, when all of the consolidations started and the bean counters took over the commercial radio world, started letting go of all their talent and having, say, for example, one program director be in charge of half a dozen radio stations, and where you've got just voice tracking as the norm, mm-hmm. and nobody's really in the building anymore. You come to a station like this where it's done really, really retro, really, really the old-fashioned way, where you're actually spinning the music and taking requests and doing it all organically that way. I think there is a lot of room for somebody like a WNCW to flourish in that environment.
It's not important. It's essential. And I'll tell you why. There was a case in North Dakota about 5 years ago, and people in this particular town, they were able to pick up about five or six radio stations. All but one of those radio stations had been taken over by companies like Comcast, and it was just, you know, just a big recording, you know, that they were listening to, you know, whether it was classic rock. There was nobody really in the building. Well, a train carrying toxic chemicals was coming through town in the middle of the night, and it spilled over. It had a wreck, and they were getting the word out that these people needed to, if they had gas masks or they had places to go underground, you know, in basements and everything, they needed to get there. Only one radio station was able to get that information out to those people.
It was the college radio station.
Yeah.
They were the only ones with actually people there.
Mm-hmm.
And they saved the day. It was
and
their,
the same
their
things
big
happened
moment.
With Katrina. You know, there had been such a I don't know what you would call it, but, you know, all the radio stations around that part of Louisiana had been taken over by companies that weren't even in the area anymore.
Well, ain't that a sign of the times, too? I think people listen to radio as much for the shared sense of community as just to hear some great tunes. I can think back to when I was a kid, you know, 7-year-old kid laying in my bed at night with my little AM transistor radio under my pillow, you know, that cliche. But I'm listening to the DJ as much talk as much as the music itself. I can still hear the DJs at WAYS in Charlotte, you know, and they're doing their call letters and doing this, you know, kind of pre-shock jock kind of, you know, hyper-caffeinated kind of style. And then years later, the same thing with the cool stoned FM DJs spinning, you know, the underground rock. You know, you seek out that human companionship. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether they're giving you the weather or, you know, the traffic updates and everything. You can't replace that. And you can tell when it's a DJ that for Clear Channel that has recorded all his IDs. They may plug in, you know, some local ID type stuff. So it sounds like, for example, if you're down in Charlotte listening to a Clear Channel radio and they make local references, it has the veneer of being local. But you can tell the difference between that and a true local station. I mean, anybody listening to WNCW knows what I'm talking about. You can listen to the low-powered station in downtown Asheville, WPVM. It's geared towards that bringing together community, not necessarily like-minded listeners, but people with a vested interest in sharing something, and perfect thing, the toxic thing, getting out the news to your friends and neighbors.
Well, there's also a lot of folks that point to the few remaining commercial stations, the mom and pops, that have not been bought out or have not gone through that consolidation as standing in the best place to be able to benefit in this sort of environment and to be able to be truly local, truly regional, whatever their coverage is, to really be in touch with that community and be a part of the fabric of that community, that those are the stations that are really going to shine, whereas all of these other commercial entities that have cut their staffs to the bone are going to continue to bleed.
You know, it's such a community thing, radio is, and it's also such a generational thing. I think we've got this huge demographic of baby boomers that love radio, and you're just going to have to get rid of them before you can get rid of radio. I remember when I was a kid, I'd go stay with my grandma and Lois in Boone sometimes, and everything in the morning stopped for Swap Shop on WATA and the Obituaries of the Air.
Well, everything around here stops for what it is. And yeah, you know, everybody are pulling over in their cars just listening to us talk right now. You know?
It's not over, though, because there are young people coming through that I have the opportunity to work with and train for our overnight program for ARC Overnight. And there are kids coming out of high school that are gunning to be in radio still, which is somewhat of a surprise to me, but maybe it shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, we could backtrack a little bit. If you look at sort of the history of the evolution of radio, it, you know, obviously it goes all the way back to the AM era, and then we moved into when FM proved itself to be a viable, i.e. a commercial and marketable format, with the penetration of stereos in most American households, that made FM stereo radio the thing. And pretty soon, you know, I mean, I think I saw a statistic that in 1978, FM officially surpassed AM as what most people listen to. And then by the mid-80s, top 40 in commercial radio had all but left AM and moved over to FM. And, of course, that led to the rise of AM talk radio, particularly sports radio and political radio, which is a whole other kettle of fish there. But the point being, the evolution has been real interesting because I think as FM has evolved, so have our tastes in what we listen to. FM has always shaped people's musical tastes. And then when we get to the Clear Channel era, all of a sudden we find out that they're not interested in shaping our tastes so much as they're trying to steer our purchasing decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely why you have these limited playlists and why it costs so much money for a record label to get a song on the radio, because the playlists are so limited, but they know how much money is potentially at stake there. Because if you've got a playlist of, what, you know, maybe 15 songs per hour, and that's rotated several times throughout the day, that ain't many songs you're going to hear, but every one of those songs potentially represents maybe a million-selling album.
Yeah, I think the rise of FM radio sort of mirrored several other trends. The trend from buying single 45s, which seems to be like an AM radio type of thing, to the trend of buying whole albums, which sort of came about at about the same time as FM radio's rise, and where people were more interested in hearing some of these deeper cuts and didn't care so much if the new Kris Kristofferson album had a hit on it or not. They wanted to hear the different tracks on it. You know, it's just a beautiful thing the way it sort of mirrored people's tastes and the way they listened to it. And you can say it shaped their taste, or you could say their tastes and the live music that people wanted to see at the time shaped FM radio. But it was a great response to the music listening revolution at the time.
If anybody out there listening wants to really delve into the history of FM radio, there's two good books I brought along. I won't review them here. I'll just mention them to them.
Oh, please read them.
I will. They're, the first one is called Radio Waves, Life and Revolution on the FM Dial. It's written by Jim Ladd, introduction by the Eagles' Don Henley, of all people. Now, Jim Ladd was a famous L.A. radio jock who rose to prominence in the 70s, which clearly the 70s and 80s was when FM DJs were true personalities and wielded a lot of power. But it's a memoir type book, a lot of colorful incidents, and you got to get a bird's eye view of what was going on in the music industry through this guy's eyes. The second book is called FM, The Rise and Fall of Rock Radio, written by Richard Neer, forward by Stephen Van Zandt, Little Stephen of Little Stephen's Underground Garage. More on that in a second, folks, so stay tuned to that dial. But FM, The Rise and Fall of Rock Radio is more of a historical account, talking about a lot of the personalities. Ladd's in there. Allison Steele, the Nightbird, is mentioned there. So it'll be a lot of familiar stories to people that grew up on radio. And certainly, if you want to kind of revisit those days and get a pretty good idea of how it evolved and how we got to where we are now. You know, Joe, you mentioned that the Telecommunications Act of 96, which Clinton signed into law, that allowed, basically just opened the floodgates for the likes of Clear Channel to own zillions of radio stations.
Yeah, whereas before there were strict rules about how many stations you could own in any given market, mm-hmm. whether you could own a newspaper and a radio station, et cetera, all of that was opened up so that companies could start this sort of gold rush towards consolidation and right. buying each other up, and it was profitable for a time. But I think the tipping point, we're way past that, and they're seeing the detriment of consolidation is that it's not as profitable with these large, far-flung entities of stations everywhere run by only fewer and fewer people. And now we're seeing that it's going back to where it began, where that you have something that's truly local is really the best option.
Well, that's a good point, because these ripple effects that, you know, you can't predict what will happen. In 96, you couldn't have predicted a lot of the things that would happen after that Telecommunications Act, but some interesting things did happen. Number one, obviously, stations like college radio and stations like WNCW were able to basically find loyal audiences as the listeners, you know, kind of fled from Clear Channel and the likes of them. The other one, there was a moment when pirate radio in America, low-powered broadcasters, literally broadcasting out of their garages. I was visited one when I was living in Tucson, and there was this core of little, you know, kind of punk rockers that were broadcasting from this guy's garage. And they got busted eventually. They had a little transmitter up on a mountain that they used. Pirate radio, of course, there's a movie out right now called Pirate Radio called Philip Seymour Hoffman about the British pirate radio ships that were moored off the coast of England in the mid-60s. So, you know, there's always a reaction to whatever's going on. The pirate radio ships were a reaction to the British government's resistance to rock and roll at the time. Well, the microtransmitters, low-powered transmitters of American pirate radio in the 90s were a reaction to the stranglehold that the large corporations were putting on the airwaves. And then, you know, where do we get to now? Well, internet radio. That's another response. People kind of saying, well, I'm going to play what I want to, and I may only broadcast or podcast to 50 people, but at least I can play what I want to hear.
Yeah, a lot of people that are really talented that have been in commercial radio or radio of whatever form are jumping into things like internet radio, and they're not making any money at it. There's no real sort of model to make any money at that quite yet, but they're going back to what's fun about it, which is the music discovery and the sort of personal expression.
Well, there's no question that these are lean times in a lot of different media, but you know, I think people will continue to come back to FM radio for a lot of different reasons. It's got this great portable aspect to it. You can listen to it at home in your car. You don't have to have your computer with you. As opposed to iPods, you know, most of the time when you're carrying around an iPod, you loaded the darn thing. You know, you're not going to hear any surprises. You know, like if you listen to WNCW, you're not going to hear the brand new stuff unless you just now you just downloaded it. So there's always that interconnection between the listener and the DJ or the music programmer or whatever, you know. So I think there's going to be an intimacy for listeners that will make FM radio survive all of these challenges.
Yeah, that's something I was just thinking about that the other day. I recently installed Pandora on both my computer and on my my BlackBerry. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of a gimmick. For those that don't know, Pandora is an internet-based recommendation service. You plug in a few songs, a few artists, and then it'll start playing music based on your on what its computer perceives to be your musical preferences. But you know, there's no DJ. So after a while, I got kind of feeling, well, you know, this is okay. I like hearing, you know, a surprise coming up in the queue, but it's not like having a DJ, you know, back announce it and everything. You know, this sort of gets back to that study you cited long ago at the very beginning of these segments we were taping about how some of the common wisdom about people's music listening habits, everybody going to computers and everybody getting their music off the internet, is just not the case.
You need the gatekeeper. You need some sort of guru to help guide you along.
Yeah, now, they haven't figured out an algorithm that can make the perfect segue yet. You know, they just haven't done it.
Well, I should at this point at least give a shout out to our frequent panelist Justin Farrar and his compatriots over at Asheville FM, which is not an FM station; it's an internet radio station called at www.ashevillefm.org, and these are a lot of them are alumni of WPVM that decide to start up their own internet station, and they have a lot of themed program. Justin's great show is called Strawberry Flats, and boy, you'll hear some freaky folk and country and twang and
maybe even a Little Feet song.
Maybe even a Little Feet song. And they got other programs like reggae and post-punk and psychedelia and comedy and indie rock and even a novelty music show. And these are people, getting back to sort of the whole theme about this, that have a vested interest in sharing the music with the listeners and in participating in it, not just, you know, like a robot pressing a button and queuing something up, but having a vested interest in being part of the whole musical mix, which is what you guys here at WNCW do, which is probably the reason we're here doing these What It Is segments anyway.
What do you think? Email us whatitis at wncw.org. Your thoughts on the state of radio today, stations like WNCW. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Jeff Eason and Fred Mills. Until next time.